The muffled sound of injustice was drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out in violence and cherry up many clubs. As the cat calls and the pressing are heard up and down Santa Clara Street. And beautiful Rosinos cut by on St. Steve in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifix hanging from the mirror. And the town when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean is no fucking Mexican zone. On a Friday night, there's no place to be, because SJPD will pull you over for being downtown and brown, and for no other reason, and you will find yourself at the corner of 27th and Santa Clara, at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by four police cruisers, while two pigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a third one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on Cops, where they tell you to spread your legs, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pass you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find
that was Greedo Serpentino, Downtown. You are perhaps downtown, perhaps uptown, but you're hopefully in front of that radio listening to 96.3 FM. That's what we are. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Let's say that all together now, folks. Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I got my broadsides. My bathrobe is at home, but who knows? Maybe I'll bring it next time. It's all about civil rights for the homeless, laws that criminalize poor people, and harassment of ordinary citizens by people in positions of power, whether they're police, university officials, redevelopment hacks, or what you will. And that's what we're going to be talking about on kind of a number of fronts today. We have a guest waiting patiently in the studio with us, Jake Althoff. Say hello, Jake. Let's see if your mic is working. Kind of belly up to the mic real close.
Okay.
Closer.
Closer.
And closer.
Closer.
And let's see if we can get this up here kind of on your level. Now say something to that mic.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, there we go. And, you know, what we're going to do is I'm going to kind of recruit you as co-host for the next few minutes. You can kind of learn as you go. And,
okay.
Of course, we're going to be talking to you about your own case, which is a case of police and prosecutorial abuse as you see it and as you have some documentation for it. And we will be getting into that. But before we do, we have a caller who's going to be calling in from the Beach Flats in about 9 minutes. That's activist and letter writer Phil Baer. Phil is a man who lives in the Beach Flats. He's a landlord. He's a longtime sort of community member here in Santa Cruz. He's been fighting to make sure that the Seaside Company doesn't take over the Beach Flats area for the last couple of decades. It was through his legal work that the Tidelands area, currently the site of a seaside parking lot, was revealed to be, in fact, the public property that it's always has been, although it was swindled away by a city council in the 30s. And unfortunately, our current city council doesn't seem to have the cojones to go into court to get it back. We've been waiting for 3 years since the last Beach South of Laurel debacle election, when we beat back the Canfield Company and its Kennedy-Grotkin-supported candidates. Now, unfortunately, we still are in the middle of a situation where the new, now the old city council members Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar have essentially decided to take a pass on any kind of militant or strong legal action. They're leaving it all in the hands of John Barisoni, the city attorney. I guess they may have actually gotten a second attorney, but we aren't seeing any legal action going on. Maybe we can hear more about this when we get Phil Baer on the line, which should be, as I said, pretty shortly. But the real subject that we're talking about today on this particular subject is sort of not the vague attack of the Seaside Company to take over the Beach Flats area, but rather the Mercy Charities housing project, which will be spending, gobbling up all the affordable housing money for the next, some say 5, some say up to 17 years, for a project that creates less housing than it serves, than it destroys, I should say, so that we have a situation where the people who lived in the Dolphin apartments, the Lee apartments, and the former Rex Court apartments, Rex Court's been destroyed, Dolphin and Lee are subject to demolition, and the city is, in essence, getting people to either disappear through relocation money or making them the promise that somewhere down the road they'll be relocated into this new housing, which is going to be a large construction built smack in the middle of the street. We thought we'd abandon the 3rd Street realignment, but it looks like they're taking over a new street in preparation for a new 3rd Street realignment. The real question here is the concerns that I had, which is, even if you want to spend all this money abusively and foolishly, are the people that have been living there, will they be allowed to return? We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I'm on Free Radio.
You are on Free Radio. And I think I recognize that vicious voice. Is that, let's see here, is that none other than the notorious Phil Baer?
Religious bigot. Yeah.
I see. Well, Baer, you're a known troublemaker. You've been told to leave city council for saying how repressive, as I remember. Mayor Fitzmaurice directed you to leave the room on pain of arrest, I would imagine, as he usually carries that threat with him when he was mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And what leads you to this kind of criminal behavior, Baer?
I think I was weaned too early.
I see. Well, possibly so. I mean, you know, you...
And then there was that pedophilia stuff.
Oh.
I don't want to go into it.
Well, it could be your Catholic upbringing. I don't want to make any cracks.
No, it was my fault. Not the priest.
I should say not your Catholic upbringing, but rather, let us say, your association with the Catholic hierarchy. That might be a better way of putting it.
No, it was all my fault. They were just doing their duty.
I see. Well, Phil, you live in the Beach Flats. Have you been listening to the show, or did you just...
No, I just tuned in. I must admit, I have not been listening. What have you been up to?
Well, you probably haven't been listening for the last 2 years, and that, in fact, is your trouble here, as well as that of many.
I can't get my radio plugged in.
I see. Well, that can be... It's a technical problem. I can appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm not technologically advanced.
Well, you apparently know enough to use a word processor to write a letter to the Sentinel. Now, do you have that letter you wrote to the Sentinel in front of you?
There again, I've let you down.
My goodness, you don't even have the letter you wrote to the Sentinel.
No.
You dog.
But I'm familiar with its contents.
Why don't you tell us what you said in your letter, and then I will read to you the harsh reply by Jane Graff of Mercy Charities Housing, as well as her co-critic, a fellow named Hernandez, is his name? Anyway, go ahead.
Rodriguez, wasn't it? Manuel Rodriguez.
It could well have been Manuel.
That's sort of the Joe Smith of Spanish names.
I see. So what in fact, did you write when you...
Well, I basically talked about the separation of church and state, and... Article 16, Section 5 of the California State Constitution, which prohibits state sponsorship of religion relative to this pork barreling that the city has done, wherein it purchased, then gave to Mercy Charities this multi-million-dollar piece of real estate, formerly known as the Dolphin and Lee properties, to be known as the Nueva Vista Affordable Housing Project, questioned whether that whole financial arrangement didn't directly violate the intent of the state Constitution, and of course the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Separation of church and state being the general area of...
Well, I know you've had concerns, and others have also expressed them, about the Mercy Housing, or Mercy Charities. I think they've changed their name recently, but it's pretty much similar in that respect.
I wasn't aware of that. What's the name change?
Well, it used to be Mercy Charities. Now it's Mercy Housing California, I think. I think they dropped the bogus charities from their name, which I suppose is truth in advertising. They've got no charity here.
Right.
But the question, I know at one time...
I also raised the fact that it's a highly profitable business. It's not a charity, as you're suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
These folks get this property free of charge. All the construction costs are paid for by the taxpayers. They then are able to charge market rate rents, most of which is then paid to them through the Section 8 program, so that the tenant is only paying 30% of his or her income. But Mercy is collecting market rate rents on rental apartments that are already paid for, so they have absolutely no mortgage payment. They don't pay income tax. In other words, they're profiting like bad dogs.
Well, it's also been pointed out that Mercy Housing has... It's under the Sisters of Mercy and the kind of the hierarchy of kind of who oversees them. And the Sisters of Mercy also oversees Catholic Healthcare West, which is kind of a notorious group that has bought churches and gotten rid of family planning service.
Hospital.
Yeah.
Right.
Although I suppose it's done with under the aegis of a sort of a religious perspective or ideology.
Oh, and undoubtedly. Yeah. They eliminate...
Well,
the whole doctrine is absolutely consistent with Catholic doctrine. For example, they will not give out birth control.
Right.
Nothing like family planning, right. Abortion, sterilization,
This is not really relevant to Mercy Housing, they claim.
Well, it's relevant in the sense that Catholic Healthcare West is clearly linked to the Catholic Church, not only structurally, but theologically, or whatever you want to call that kind of stuff. And that's a sister organization of Mercy Charities.
They were also sharing a board member with...
I think most of the upper-level people are the same. The same people head both Mercy Charities and Catholic Healthcare West.
Well, I only knew of only one individual who fit that category, but I also know that...
there are more than one.
That counts, well, I'd like to see the stats. Now, do you know the names of anybody involved?
Not offhand, but I've seen it from fairly authoritative
sources. Okay, pass it on to me. I'd like to...
There's a lot of overlap in the board of directors and so on.
I know when I brought this up at City Council, Council Member Sugar interrupted me. Council Member Fitzmaurice stood up angrily, denounced me as a bigot, and left the room. I was simply asking the question, if there are no financial connections here that should concern us, that's fine, but we are a progressive city. We don't want Catholic Healthcare West getting all the city's affordable housing money through a dummy front of Mercy Housing California. And I'm not saying that that's what it was, but I'm saying that there was questions about the connections between those two groups. And I don't think they were ever satisfactorily addressed. On the other hand, I didn't have any evidence that there was, direct financial exchanges between them. So I let that issue die, and I turned to the issue of, will the people who are being displaced from existing housing, Dolphin Lee and Rex Court apartments, will they get at least assured housing, and will they and those who are living there be able to continue to live there in security? And of course, the answers that we got were they weren't going to get the guarantees of relocation and return. They were going to get something called first preferences, which meant that Mercy Charities could redesign its standards when they came back. And there were also concerns whether there had been drug use or whether there had been felony convictions and things of this sort, as well as credit violations and landlord eviction histories. These things apparently have, I think we'll learn later from another activist who'll be calling in, have again raised their ugly head. And then, of course, you have something to report that, I guess, a tenant came to you and said that the relocation money, the $55,250 promised for the tenants that are being displaced by this project, was not forthcoming?
Yes, but all I know is what this guy told me and what his former landlady, Maria Gutierrez, told me, that he did, in fact, live there for a long period of time, and I saw his driver's license, which had the address on it. But unfortunately, his manager handed over all the records to redevelopment, didn't make copies, and this guy had no rent receipts or a rental agreement. So
he's out shit in the cold. Or,
That could be the case. The larger picture, as I understand it, in that regard, is that already most of the former residents of the Dolphin and Lee properties, these people who were made these magnanimous promises, for some reason, the vast majority of them have already accepted this much smaller amount of money, in return for which they signed waivers of their right to return to the newly constructed units.
Well, this sounds,
therein lies, yeah, got to lie,
this
a very curious story.
This sounds like what we heard from, was being said by former council member Catherine Byers, who is really kind of the key force behind this project. What she apparently said in a kind of a private constituents meeting was that if the the question was raised, well, can you actually, you know, provide housing for all the people that there? I mean, some estimate as many as 300 to 400 people were living in that complex. Some said it was more like 200 to 300, but there were a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And to relocate all those people is a huge expense, and, mm-hmm. and it's just, how can you afford it? And she looked at the people and she said, there's always the buyout. And with that, and then, of course, 2 years later, Mayor Keith Sugar said to activist Scott Graham, that he acknowledged they weren't going to be able to take care of everybody, but that's just how it went, and some people would just have to go, and that what they were looking for was this sort of average curve where some people get tired of waiting or getting nervous about if they'll ever get back into the final project, and they'll take whatever money they can get and leave. And the money they're being offered, I think it's $5,250,
mm-hmm.
which sounds like a chunk of money for somebody who's, maybe will be going back to Mexico or Guatemala or Nicaragua. In a sense it is, and another sense, it doesn't buy low-income housing around here for more than, what, I don't know, half a year to a year.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with really replacing low-income housing for these folks.
Right.
So, I mean, and we wondered, why don't they spend the money they were going to dump in the Mercy Charities housing, hat, and instead buy bunches of property that are going to be accumulating in value, or buy some property that is really escalating in rent, like the Rodriguez property, I guess it was, the apartments,
right.
You know, that were just doubled in rent a year ago, and that there was all this, you know, falderall about, essentially, not to deal with that kind of thing, but not to deal with the rents that were being raised in those apartments, but to cover for the Dolphin Lee project, which in essence, they took over properties where rents were not being raised, as far as I know.
Yeah, I had never heard allegations that either the Dolphin or the Lee was jacking the rent up very high either, or was prepared to do so. Those were both stable ownership places with reasonable rents, mm-hmm. So I don't see that it was warranted in that respect. Though, to me, the really grim deception that occurred here was the Mercy people and the city council people acting as if the legal status of the residents of those two properties was not going to be a factor, in spite of the fact that a number of people told them quite clearly, handed them the guidelines from the feds and from the state, indicating the strength with which the prohibition against the use of those crucial funding sources for the provision of housing for people not in the country illegally was just very obvious, unambiguous, and people said, hey, actually going for the funding that's going to pay for this project, the funding sources are going to require proof that your proposed residents are all legal citizens.
And
they absolutely denied that. And it's obviously, to me, quite obviously happened since then.
Mm-hmm.
These funding sources have required such documentation. So now, in this, I think, is the only logical explanation for why so many of these people are taking this relatively paltry $5,250 rather than the thousands of dollars of temporary relocation assistance and then the hundreds of thousands of dollars of rent subsidy that they would have received had they stayed any length of time whatsoever in the newly constructed apartments.
But, you know,
the only explanation is that these people are being told that if they don't take the check they're being handed, they're going to get screwed entirely.
It's possible, Phil, but you don't have the documentation for that, and I don't.
Provide another logical explanation for why more than half of those people would take what amounts to about one-hundredth of what they were promised.
Well, it could be they're all on the FBI terrorist list and looking to get out of town.
You're just not wishing to face that grim truth. There's no other logical explanation for why those people are being bought out so inexpensively.
Right. Well, I'm up for the logical explanations, but I also want to see the documentation. We can speculate from here to, you know, to Hoodah land. By the way, in the studio,
whatever you're saying there is somehow eluding me.
Well, no. What I'm saying is we got to have the documentation. I mean, we can speculate on what's going on, but I want to know, for example, where's the evidence that, for example, they're no longer getting the tax credit money that they were going to get. I know they were concerned that they were going to lose that tax credit money, and I was hoping we could get a researcher to kind of give us the latest update on
that. It would be nice.
That
would be very good. I'm not doing that kind of research.
Right.
You're obviously not.
Well,
It would be quite revealing.
Maybe we can get someone to call in. By the way, in the studio with us, we have former city council candidate Jake Olthoff. Is that correct? And Jake, you've been listening to this. You want to make a comment on what you've been hearing that Phil and I talk about?
Oh, I was just going to say that maybe people are taking the money now because they figure they're going to get screwed in the end no matter what the government promises them. I mean,
can you hear that?
I don't think you need somebody to tell you that, you know what I'm saying, that the money that they're handed to you now is more of a sure thing than any promise they could give you. I mean,
yes, right. That's absolutely true, but as Robert will testify, these people were promised from open city council meetings and from the leaders of Mercy Charities, Elizabeth Vogel amongst others, that they would receive absolute assurance of their ability to return to the newly constructed apartments, that they would receive a subsidy of the rent on the relocation house, what they had to move into while their the project was being constructed, and that the amount of that subsidized rent could total as much as $42,000,
right.
And they would each and every one be virtually guaranteed that amount, and then, of course, permanently subsidized housing went more than 30% of their income. They were promised the moon.
But in writing? Did they put it in writing?
No. That's what Robert is saying.
Rub.
We pushed for some sort of formal guarantee,
They had something in writing, but it wasn't the guarantees that both SCAN asked them to put forward, that the Green Party asked them to put forward, that, in essence, I remember Keith Sugar promised you and I in various different settings that he would never vote for this unless there were guarantees, and of course there were, and Porter then, you know, also ducked this issue, Ed Porter, another council member, when he came into power. Saying that he thought it was a red herring, the issue, but never answering or responding to this real concern. What they did do is they said something about giving people money for housing if they want to go purchase a house as a family, and also giving people an immediate $5,250, but as you said, up to $42,000 was mentioned in a kind of a three-pronged document that they had. But the trouble is, the document was, I don't think it was legally binding in the way that we had really urged, and in the way Residentes Unidos, the tenants organization, had urged that it be, so that the city council passed it as a resolution and required it of its own redevelopment agency and of Mercy Charities Housing.
Right.
Never did that I'm aware of, unless I'm wrong about that, and we may be getting some information from Becky Johnson.
No, they didn't. And it's all exactly reminiscent of what they did with Neary's Lagoon, where they came down to the beach flats and they got a bunch of Mexicans to go to city council meetings complaining about their housing conditions, and then the appeal, the way they sold the proposed Nearest Lagoon project was that it was going to provide acceptable housing for these poor, abused Latinos, as if they, the Beach Flats people, in other words, were promised the Nearest Lagoon housing. Then once they got the okays for the project, they suddenly discovered that HUD prohibitions prevented them from designating those housing units to some specific individual, that they had to distribute that housing through a random pulling numbers out of the hat kind of a process.
I remember that. That was the Nearest Lagoon problem. Let me skip now to a letter that criticized your letter, which we don't have, but you have summarized, that you wrote to the Sentinel about a month ago. I think it was March 15th, but for some reason we can't find it. But here's a letter dated March 26th from Jane Graff, who is president of our very favorite Mercy Housing California, and she's writing in response to a letter written by Phil Baer regarding the planned affordable housing development. She makes this statement: "The idea that this housing, which serves low and very low-income residents, is profitable underscores the lack of knowledge about nonprofit affordable housing developments. Any and all funds associated with this property will be used to ensure the long-term maintenance of the property, high-quality management, and to the benefit of the families that reside there. This is not profiteering at public expense. On the contrary, Mercy Housing is providing a critically needed service to the public, the provision of safe, high-quality, affordable housing." Comments?
Well, if they have to invest all of their money, all of their rental income, to manage the place and those other costs that she attributes, so that there's none left over, there's no profit, and they have no mortgage payment because they got the property for free, and they don't pay property taxes, then how the hell is the private guy supposed to even break even when he's paying mortgage payments? You know, that's jive. They're making money well beyond their expenses.
Now, do you have any?
And she's not. What is the cost of housing? The cost of housing is in the construction of it, the cost of the land to buy it, the purchase price, the cost of borrowing the money.
Jake has a comment here.
I'm just wondering. So
close.
Oh. So is Mercy Housing, is that is this an all volunteer thing, or is she drawing a salary?
Oh, they're drawing salaries.
Oh,
well, then it's
kind of
profitable,
man,
for her. It sounds like.
Yeah, she gets.
She can afford to live here in Santa Cruz.
$70,000 a year from the city, and they hire numerous people. They had experts galore coming down to snow the city, and of course it's it's certainly it pays off its people. The question, though, again for me, and I'm always looking for the documentation, is where is the evidence that the money coming into this project is going, let's say, to either the private profit of other people? I mean, you can say, I mean, this is the argument they will make, is, you know, we need managers to run these things, and paying them a reasonable.
All properties need managers.
You know, living wage is not considered profiteering. That's simply meeting the costs. Where is the evidence that the amount of money they're getting is going into some boondoggle somewhere else? I mean, I don't have that evidence. I'd like to see it. But, you know, like, I guess she's disputing on that. Now, she continues in her letter, Jane Graff of Mercy Housing does, "The government funds in question have not been awarded to the Catholic Church. Mercy Housing is a charitable, nonprofit, non-religious organization that benefits from the sponsorship of 11 congregations of Catholic women. Not only have these women contributed their long history of community service, they do so independently as part of a long-standing non-sectarian tradition of service. Catholics, Protestants, Jews, Muslims, many other religions have often driven these types of social programs. Assuming that church ties increase the capacity of these groups to serve communities is myopic and undermines the advancements these organizations are making every day for people in need." What do you say
what
to that, Mr. Scrooge?
Of Mercy Charities renters are Catholic?
I would say probably 95%.
So with all this talk about Jews, Muslims, and non-sectarians seems a little vacuous to me.
Well, I speak to some extent out of ignorance. I'm thinking of Sycamore Commons and Neary Lagoon, and my just sort of my sense. I assume they're Catholic because they are Latino, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're Catholic. You know, that they could have some other religions. I imagine you have your Latino Jews and Latino Muslims, and even a Latino atheist or two.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you got devil worshippers and all kinds
and Mercy Housing worshippers or Mercy Housing
right.
tolerators.
Right.
You know, that's the other thing. I know that when I was at City Council talking to some of the tenants who were being rounded up by Mercy Housing and what's her name? Veronica Lopez Duran, formerly a tenant activist, now a Mercy Housing hack, as I would say. And she, you know, they were, the tenants kind of talked to me afterward quietly, and they said, we're worried about what's going on here, but they're telling us to come in, and they're promising us this, and, you know, and there was a sort of, I feel a kind of a coercive and a manipulative element happening there. And I guess you have gotten a specific complaint from a particular resident of the Dolphin, right?
A few, actually, though I don't know, you know, if you're going to ask for documentation, I'm not going to be able to provide you much on that either.
No, I understand, I will always be asking for documentation because that's the best thing to get. But on the other hand, that doesn't mean that people who are coming forward with concerns are to be ignored because they don't have all the documentation. I don't say that either.
Right.
Another letter that came from critical of your letter was from Manuel Rodriguez, who apparently you suggest this letter may have been written by somebody other than Manuel.
I'd bet my life savings on it.
With so many problems in beach flats, such as open drug dealing, gangs, substandard housing, one would think that providing decent housing for people in the flats was the biggest crime in Santa Cruz. Perhaps Mr. Bear prefers that people live in third world-like conditions here in Santa Cruz. Perhaps that's packed in like sardines. Are you the Mayor Sugar? That's what he said, of course, during the scam meeting.
Why don't you read it through and get the tone of it and
right.
Ask yourself if it sounds like something Rodriguez wrote or whether it sounds like that you've heard Mercy Charities again and again and again.
Again, I don't know Manuel. As a taxpayer, I would welcome almost any religions or secular organization that would partner with government in the very difficult task of providing decent and affordable housing in this town. I'm going to interrupt the letter by saying that one of the great concerns I had about Mercy was that they are a monopoly service provider in Santa Cruz. No other organizations, the Pajaro Valley group or Habitat for Humanity or any of the other groups, were not allowed any kind of access to the bidding or any kind of possible competition for this whole project. So it was simply handed to them on a silver platter. There was no partnership with anybody else. That's number one.
They are the city's designated provider.
Right, they're
of affordable housing.
Sole source provider, which is always dangerous because, you know, it tends to make you sloppy. That's one. And point two is, and this I've made in a recent Brown Act complaint, which I'll be making in a week or so, delayed because of my attorney's suggestions, but I'm going to do it anyway. As you may know, I'm suing City Council for Brown Act violations, not Brown Act violations, for First Amendment violations, for having activists harassed and arrested and threatened with arrest of City Council for simply standing up and speaking. But the one thing that Mercy Charities Housing has been doing for the last 3 years is holding closed meetings. Their board has been holding closed meetings, even though the mayor sits on their board. They are funded by the city, and the mayor votes on their board, which seems to me to be explicitly a Brown Act violation, which is a violation of the law that says you got to have meetings open to the public if you're going to be using public funds and making decisions that affect the public. We're talking with Phil Baer in the Beach Flats about the Dolphin Lee Project. In the studio, we have Jake Oltham. Oltoff. I'm going to get that right one of these days, Jake. And Phil, anything more you want to add? Are you able to get into these housing projects without being arrested by Veronica Lopez Duran? Have you been over there?
No, I got bogged down in a bunch of stuff and couldn't today. I really don't know what. It's pretty quiet down there, strangely enough. Mm-hmm. I think the former residents have gone somewhere else.
Well, that's the final thing I want to note is that that was one of the most, I think, mendacious and deceptive or else wildly blind pieces of thinking I ever heard from former Mayor Fitzmaurice that somehow he was doing this to preserve the Latino character of that neighborhood. In fact, he is destroying the character of the neighborhood by forcing people to relocate and move. And they'll select their own new people. Mercy Housing will. They can have whatever color they want, although I guess traditionally they have put a lot of Latino folks in their projects, which I have no problem. And I have no problem with there being illegals, as long as I think a lot of illegals work a lot harder than the legals, and that probably members of the audience may disagree with me. But the problem I have is when they lie to the city about what they're doing, they give all the whole pie to one particular service provider. That service provider meets in private behind closed doors, and then they end up ripping off the very people that they're supposed to serve. That pisses me off.
Well, how about a gaudy, large portrait of the Virgin of Guadalupe in a public park on the side of a publicly owned building at the entrance to the Beach Flats neighborhood? Does that draw your ire?
No, doesn't bother me, but I can understand how it would bother a number of people who are concerned about separation of church and state. I mean, I would appreciate their feelings.
You're not?
Well, I am to some extent, but I've always had great regard for the Virgin of Guadalupe, and that, of course,
I had that
as well as the rake of the Beach Flats. I want to see your picture up there as well.
For you, however.
Right. Well, I'm in favor of, you know, getting rid of crucifixes and crosses and, you know, I don't know, for what way you will, big, you know, mile-high copies of the Quran on public, you know, land at public expense. I think that's nonsense.
And a depiction of the Virgin of Guadalupe fall into that category?
Well, virginity has always offended me, frankly, but that's because of, you know, my sexist attitudes, and I've got to really kind of re-examine that. But
But what about Virgin Mothers?
Virgin Mothers. That sounds
a
little...
There's no contradiction.
It sounds like a religious mystery to me, man.
It is a religious mystery.
It's extremely mysterious. And frankly...
It's like your...
the Easter Bunny, perhaps?
Priest.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there are those who swear by this stuff, and I'm not going to... I'm going to tell them I think they're, you know, I don't understand it, and I think it sounds like, you know, fairy tales to me, but some people believe in this with all their heart and soul.
You like Cardinal Lay?
Sorry?
Cardinal Lay, Boston?
Is that some sort of sexual innuendo?
No, you haven't been following that.
Oh, well, there you're talking about pedophilia in the Catholic Church's hierarchy, or
in the cardinal who is just exposed as having known about it for probably the most prominent cardinal in the United States.
You know, Jake wants to say something about that.
Oh, yeah, if you find that scary, listen, and I'll be telling my story about. Basically, they got the same kind of cover-ups and. Moving those types of people out of the daycare up at the UC.
He's going to be talking about his case coming up soon.
Cool.
But listen, Phil.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to vent.
Yeah, no. I mean, I
sense that want to get rid of me tone in your voice, and I'll comply.
Only you and the Virgin both. I want to make sure that we have the Virgin equal time. In fact, we may have the Virgin calling in shortly.
Yeah.
And. We want to give the...
Call me Father Phil.
Okay, Daddy. And I want to thank you for calling in. And again, for more information on this, Phil, can you be reached by phone, or are you trying to keep a safe distance from the...
By whom?
Well, by people who have more questions about this issue.
The Mercy Charities we're talking about?
Yes.
I did digress into some things.
Yes, you did. I'll tell you what, if people are interested, they can call the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is the organization I work with. And I will forward calls to you for those who seem suitably appropriate.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Does that sound good?
Yeah, you filter it for me and
eliminate
the wackos, please.
Don't want no non-virgins calling you.
Right.
All right.
Nice talking to you.
Phil, is there any more you want to say? I don't want to completely cut you off.
No, that about wraps it up for me. I just think that it's a relationship between a city government and an obviously religious organization, and the loopholes that they try to use to say that, you know, like they didn't give the Dolphin Lee project to Mercy. They sold it to them for $1. So it's not a gift, it's a sale. Things like Mercy is not part of the Catholic Church. These are obviously structured ways in which they're trying to find loopholes around the clear legislative intention of both state and federal law.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
Alrighty.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Our phone lines are open briefly before we roll into the next segment of our show. In case you wish to say anything more about the Mercy housing aspect of the situation, I think, in fact, we were hoping to get a call from, I believe, my producer. That's the fearless Becky Johnson, ever at her post and ever unappreciated, had called the actual redevelopment agency, which is one of the two major schemers, along with Mercy Housing, that have foisted this project upon us. I think this may be her calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I don't want to be mistaken for any virgin.
Oh, okay. Well, speak for yourself.
I did come up with a little bit more information about the Mercy Charities. Forget the charity.
Mm.
Mercy Housing, California.
Right.
The Dolphin Apartments originally started with 157 occupants.
Oh, I think a lot more than that, but that's, I guess, the number that they had when they bought them, right?
That's the number that they claim were living there when they bought them.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was, there were more people, especially if you consider seasonal people, who came and went with the various agricultural harvesting and you know, the crops.
Hmm.
So the Dolphin Apartments did kind of swell and shrink on an annual basis.
So you knew of people who were agricultural workers in the Dolphin?
Oh, yeah. I met several of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go to back to Mexico for as much as they could, really.
Mm-hmm.
They that's where their families were.
Right.
So now there are 87 people in the Dolphin.
So it's about half as many as there were.
70 have been relocated.
Oh, well, that could be considered to be a success, meaning they've been put into other housing temporarily or permanently.
In every case, they got the $5,250 buyout.
That means that they have been permanently exiled from the upcoming Dolphin Lee project. That means they are off the list.
They don't live there anymore now, and they're not expected to apply for the new housing.
Half of them have been bought off. Interesting. Go ahead.
Okay, now, at the Lee property, which they have renamed Lee Brandt,
mm-hmm.
They said that their starting number was 93,
mm-hmm.
and their current count is 53.
Again, about half, a little bit more than half.
40 have been relocated.
Now, again, we're not talking about relocated in the sense of this is where you're going to go temporarily while we demolish the housing and build this new wonderful thing with the child care center and the community center and all these fine services that make it so worthwhile, right?
I don't think that these people have any option to return at this point. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure they're welcome to put in their application, but having received this... that they're not eligible,
mm-hmm.
on any special basis.
Did you find out when the next meeting of the Mercy Charities Housing Closed Board is?
I didn't ask them that question.
Huh.
So,
just kind of
not
curious.
Not that they would tell me, because the last two times I called and asked them when the meeting was and where it was.
Who did you talk to? Are you talking about redevelopment
agency?
That's the city public-funded organization supposedly accountable under the Brown Act, which wouldn't tell you when this meeting was, correct?
Right,
on two different occasions.
So I didn't ask them this time.
Uh-huh.
But they did give me this information, which I appreciate.
Uh-huh.
The little drib that comes out.
Yeah, good. Mm-hmm. You learn it gutatum, as we say. Go ahead. Drip, drop by drop. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we started out with 250 people at these two apartments, and now we have 110. And that's 25 families who are... Oh, I do have some more information about the funding that... Remember last fall that they were having these...
Yeah, they were very concerned. They actually sent someone down to Los Angeles to try to argue not to change their priorities in the funding, and I think they... What happened with that?
Well, it all went away.
What do you mean?
Either the change didn't go into effect right away, and it didn't affect this particular project, or the what changes they made were not the ones that they feared would happen.
So it's still possible
something
to get
like
the,
that.
To get
no.
The tax
so,
credit. The
so,
tax,
they, so they believe that they are in line.
The tax credits that they want, they still have access to, so
yeah.
They don't have to, as Phil Baer feared, get rid of all the illegal immigrants, because they can't do that, because for HUD funding, you need to have only squeaky clean legal people, right? What did you think of that argument that Phil made?
I think it's a good argument that, we were always concerned that if there was federal money involved, and because of legislation that's passed as an anti-immigrant, that they wouldn't be eligible for the new housing.
Mm-hmm.
And the city and Mercy Housing and the Redevelopment Agency all assured us that they knew which pots to take the money out of so that it wouldn't affect the people, their legal status.
Do we have any evidence that they don't know? Because it sounds like you're saying that the claims they made before, they're still making, and there's no reason
to disbelieve
them.
The funding had not been finalized. It still hasn't been. They submitted their application in March, and they expect to hear back in either May or June on whether those income tax credits the project will be eligible for those. And when they get that money, that'll be the last funding pin to put in place, and the project will proceed, because Mercy doesn't even start a project until they have all the funding in place.
Mm-hmm.
And they really don't provide any of their own funding.
Well, the city is, of course, funding the Mercy Housing officials who are running around, making nice middle-class salaries off this whole thing.
And have been for years,
Elizabeth Vogel and others. Anything more that you've come up with that we should know about?
It's just, we have Mayor Crone, who also voiced something about that he had always voted in favor of the project because he wanted that little community to be protected. And you might remind him that of the 250 he started with, there are only 110 left now.
And to call Mayor Crone, you can give a quick call to 420-5023. That's his phone number, 420-5023. We're not talking about his home phone number. That's actually his office phone number, 420-5023. And Mayor Crone, if by some chance you happen to be listening and you wish to clarify or reassure us on some of these issues, the phone lines here are open, and it's easy to call us, 427-3772, 427-3772. I do recall that Mayor Crone, when he was Councilmember Crone, voted against the plan to cut out the lead tenants from the whole business back in July of 2000, when they did a special deal where they refused to meet with the tenant relocation committee. What was it called? The tenant advisory committee.
The Relocation Advisory Committee.
Which was voted in by the city council to sort of supposedly, involve the tenants and so forth.
We're supposed to have a majority of tenants on the board of directors.
And it did have a majority of tenants, and they essentially said, we don't want any of this stuff without the guarantees. And of course, when they brought that to SCAN and back to council, Sugar at the SCAN meeting said that they were, if they wanted to live like packed in like sardines in filthy conditions, they could always do that in Mexico, and that he would let them do it here too, he guessed. But, and he also, then of course he arrested David Silva, had him dragged off to the Nut Ward as he attempted to approach the city council to discuss this issue.
A few days later.
On June 13th, 2000. That's going to be part of course, the federal lawsuit that hopefully will... I don't know, maybe throw some light on some of these issues. Anything more that you have to say about the Dolphin Lee project?
We need to put any of these bids for affordable housing out for, put them out for bid. Let different organizations compete and put in bids for them. We're not getting our bang for our buck
mm-hmm.
out of Mercy. I think their salaries are too high. I think they pad every bill I think the quality construction uses some of the cheapest materials. I think the rules are too strict.
In terms of how the tenants, where they can live and have what they can do in their apartments?
It's kind of one strike and you're out.
Uh-huh.
And people really are very timid when they live in Mercy housing. It's very oppressive, in my view, to have all these little tiny rules that you're subject to, and any one of them could result in your eviction.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. I'm going to sign off.
Hey, thank you for calling in, and you know, if you learn more, let us know at the next show. We, of course, will be coming back on Sunday from 10 to 1:30, or next week from 6 to 8 at this time.
Great.
Hey. Talk to you then. Radio, you're on the air.
Hi, Robert. This is Eleanor.
Hey, Eleanor. One of the few people who have successfully sued Mercy Housing California.
And successfully escaped. Actually, I didn't sue them. I defended myself successfully. I did sue them. Yes, I do have... That case is still open, but the one that I won on was where they had an unlawful detainer lawsuit against me, which I had a jury trial and I won.
Yeah, they tried to evict you from Sycamore Commons. You're a disabled woman who knows how to handle a law book.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, well, the reason why I'm calling is I tuned in the middle of your conversations with Phil Baer, and I heard Becky Johnson's, and I'd like to make some clarifications along with some cheering. I appreciate Becky's reporting, and I appreciate Phil Baer and his letter. I spoke with him the day it appeared in the papers. But I'd like to disagree respectfully about some of the comments that were made by, I guess it was a person who was defending Mercy, and other people who tend to like to defend Mercy.
Perhaps Jane Groff, huh?
Right. Never answered any of my letters. First of all, Mercy Housing creates, designs, and it builds substandard housing. You read, somebody wrote a letter in, I guess, who was defending them, saying that other people are living in packed in like sardines and in substandard conditions. Well, Mercy Housing packs them in like sardines and is substandard housing. And whatever rules that people may be referring to, they never evict anybody for anything they do wrong. I was the only one they ever did it to, and they had a personal grudge against me, and they had no legal basis for it, and that's why they lost.
They tried to punish you, and it wasn't just you they've tried to punish. They've tried to punish others. I know Ed Fry tried to unsuccessfully to defend a family that Mercy promised could return to housing and then denied them when they tried to come back.
Oh, he's not done with that, though. They're on appeal now.
Mm-hmm.
That's not over. I'm sure most cases get one on appeal. Yeah, that was a situation where there were tenants. I think she was also a disabled woman. They said, well, you know, we're just going to go out for a little while, and we're going to spruce the place up, and then you can come back in. And then, of course, they didn't do that at all. They didn't let them back in. But the only quirk that Mercy has, which I think I can explain, is the one about no curtains. Well, that's because the wall can't handle even a thumbtack,
really?
Much less a curtain rod. Those walls can't hold them. That can maybe dispel that myth there. But, you know, one of the main reasons why I called is I think that some letter writing is in order on the part of all concerned taxpayers of Santa Cruz County. And I believe the letter should go to Jeff Almquist on the Board of Supervisors. A few months ago, during a meeting, he made a comment about apparently more money is coming into the area. The county is tapping the funds that Bill Clinton set up for housing. And they're talking about who's going to be coming in to do what. And I believe that a letter to him is in order based on a comment he made. He's against substandard housing being built, so-called affordable and low-income being substandard. And I'm a victim of substandard housing, and it's not necessarily what we think it is. I know I never knew the true meaning of it until I lived in Sycamore Commons. We need to have reach all people, not just the poor and the homeless and ones who would like to get into these places, but the taxpayers of Santa Cruz, because our money is being used for these projects, and they should be thought out carefully who goes into them. Mercy Housing has a reputation for building substandard housing, and whether they choose to go with them or anyone else, I think letters are in order to Jeff Almquist, since he expressed concern, expressing the desire that they look very carefully at whoever puts housing up. It's a privilege to do business here in Santa Cruz. Most people can't afford to do business here, and by their good fortune and the tax dollars that were pledged for nonprofits to put up subsidized housing, they're getting to do business here. And in cases like Mercy Housing, they end up owning the land that is being paid for by tax dollars. And this is, of course, wrong.
Now, I don't know if that's actually true in the case of the Dolphin Lee project.
I don't know about that one, yeah. But I know in Mercy Housing, the Sycamore Commons, by the way, they're not Mercy Charities. They are Mercy Services Corporation. They are a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So the short name would be Mercy's Corporation if you wanted to, but there's no charity in there.
So not Mercy Housing California?
No, it's Mercy Services Corporation.
Hmm.
That's what they really are. I know I sued them, and they had to provide their correct name to me as a result.
You have unmasked them, Eleanor.
A little bit.
Well, I hope we can get you to testify also about the city council's behavior. I know I've been putting out on the air my concerns about getting folks for this upcoming lawsuit in the federal courts where they felt intimidated or hassled at city council. And I don't know how you felt, but I'm trying to get people who have had that experience either directly through a hassle or because they've seen other people be hassled.
Well, I am applauding you that you're going forward with this lawsuit. You know, Robert and I have for years been saying it's got to be done, and you're, I believe, a good person, a definitive person to do it to, because you are in their face. You know, basically, and you are constantly in there, aware of the wrongdoings and pointed out, and I think that they tend to try and find a way to shut you up constantly, or leave you out somehow, because they know that you are a force that they can't contend with, because you speak the truth and they don't have the answers and they don't want to hear what you have to say, and that's not right. I think if a person is conducting themselves respectfully and not ranting and raving and throwing things, that what they have to say, whether or not it's something that the council wants to hear, they're compelled to listen to it. And whether or not they act on it, that's their own business, but certainly they have to listen.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, and that's their job, and I'm delighted that you're going forward with this, because you know, you and Becky Johnson and a few others have just been continuous for the community here in that regard, and we don't want your rights to be trampled, because your rights are very valuable, because they're our rights as well.
Well, that's why I'm hoping that other people like yourself will come forward and join this lawsuit, because it's not just me. It's, we have to show a pattern in practice.
Well, I only had one experience where I was cut short, and that was when Catherine Byers became mayor. I believe it was the first meeting she chaired when they were talking about homeless issues, and she decided to cut it short to 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't possibly go that fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was rude. I mean, I've testified at other councils and other communities, and also I have testified before this council and heard others testify who go far beyond the 3 minute limit.
Right. Well, you don't even actually have to, and I'm saying this not just for your benefit, but for that of others listening, you don't even have to have been specifically cut off yourself. If you've seen others cut off in a fashion that makes you feel chilled, that's what counts. If you can testify to observing a pattern and practice of harassment, that's what we need.
Yeah, I haven't, but I'm completely aware of the facts of the violations that were committed against you a few years ago.
Indeed you are, because you helped me file a Brown Act lawsuit, which is still gathering dust, but hopefully now noble dust.
Yes.
Eleanor, thank you for calling in. Anything you want to conclude with?
Nothing, except for thank you and Becky and Phil and everyone else for continuing on for the rights of individuals.
Okay, and thank you.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Bye.
All right.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, as I struggle with the CD player. I'm getting some assistance here from my technical expert. You want to call in, 427-3772 is the number to call. We're going to be turning shortly to some interesting horror stories from Jake here in the studio with us. He's going to be talking about his experiences, and you may want to tune your kids out on this one, but perhaps it depends on how old your kids are and how tough they are in terms of listening to what happened to him and a case of child abuse up at UCSC and prosecutorial misconduct and other things. Stay with us, and we'll be right back. Yeah.